Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Big Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Just me today. Going to do a solo pod. Going to answer some questions. See what you guys have to say. Wanted to let you know that Tara Reid does say, "What's up, guys? Hope you're having a great day or night, wherever in the world you are." Space, exclamation point. I feel like that's directed towards us. I feel like it's directed towards the EOB pod casters and listeners at the same time. Before we get into your questions today, which you guys seem to really like, I don't know if hit is the right word. That seems a little optimistic and maybe pompous, but you guys definitely seem to like the podcast where you ask questions and I ramble for 35 to 40 minutes and we all kill a little bit of time. Before we get into that, Greg Oden returned. I'm so happy. I'm really, really happy. This kind of made my season. It's been a bit of a dull season when you think about it. Just not a ton of drama going on. A lot of injuries that are taking star players out of the fold for either the entire season or a good chunk of the season. And in a season of injuries like this, it kind of seems funny that Greg Oden would be back 1,500 plus days after playing his last game. He looked good last night. He was gassed after just a few minutes, as you would be. But he dunked a couple of times. He played really good pick and roll defense. If you get a chance on Heat.com, Cooper Moorhead has a really good breakdown of Greg Oden's minutes on the floor. Very happy for him. The Boston Celtics have traded Jordan Crawford to the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors now have Stizus, and I love the trade for them. They get to pick up a scorer off the bench, which they previously didn't have. Maybe he can provide a little life, assuming he fits into somewhat of the mentality and the game plan and doesn't just entirely do his own thing. Maybe Brad Stevens corrected that a little bit with him. But very happy. We'll probably have Ethan Sherwood-Strauss on the podcast tomorrow to discuss that further. For now, let's get to your questions. First question comes from @AlanMarkCA. Can my 7-year-old niece design better All-Star jerseys? Don't know if you saw. You can see it on CBSSports.com. We've got the pictures of the leaked jerseys. It looks really bad. There's like the NOLA logo, that kind of Saints logo on the front, and then it's just a weird colorway. It's like blue with green, and I mean it's very Mardi Gras-ish. But not great jerseys. They're sleeved, which people will freak out about, but you got to get used to it. That's the way of the future in the NBA in terms of uniforms and jerseys. We're just going to see more and more sleeved attempts as the years go on, and eventually it'll probably be all sleeved, and the throwbacks will be the tank top style jersey. Not a great look. I'd like to see what the Western Conference looks like, but as of right now, yes, your 7-year-old niece could design a better jersey. Chris Barnwell, @ChrisBarnwell, asks, are jersey retirements really more than just a team narrative? Also, thoughts on Lebatard's Hall of Fame vote? The Hall of Fame vote thing is, I like Dan Lebatard. I don't know that it's the most sports ethical way to go about using your vote. I don't even know if that's a thing. There are a lot of unwritten rules. I think if you're going to give a vote to someone, you run the risk of them making a mockery of the entire thing. And I'd be shocked if they gave him another vote. I guess I don't have a problem with what he did because he used his vote in the way he saw fit, and they saw him fit to use a vote in whichever way he decided. So that would, it's not a great situation, but neither is Hall of Fame voting. So I guess I'm fine with it. In terms of jersey retirements, it is just a team narrative. I mean, you look at like the Lakers and Celtics, there's the two best franchises in NBA history, and they have a lot of jerseys retired, a lot of numbers retired, because they've had a lot of great players. And I think it does tell the story of your franchise. If you're the Kings and all you've got up there are guys from the Cincinnati Royals and then Mitch Richmond and Chris Webber, Vlade Divac. I don't know if Page is up there yet, but if not, he probably will be. That's the story of their franchise. It's not the same as the Lakers. It's not the same as the Celtics, but that's their story. And it really is just, hey, this is what we've been. This is who has been important to us. I think there's some kind of conversation about whether or not the Magic should look at Jameer Nelson's jersey. I don't know if retiring, maybe they should just like have a Jameer Nelson night where everyone comes on the court and takes a mid-range jumper off a pick and roll. I don't know. I don't know what they should do in terms of that, but definitely not retire his jersey. And it really is just this is what our franchise has been. @Alejandro1, what are three teams that have surprised you the most based on how they finished last season? I don't know that. Well, I guess we can include the Portland Trailblazers. They've definitely surprised. I expected them to. Well, say expected. I guess that they would make the playoffs. I don't want to sound like I was more sure of it than I am, but I thought they would be the seventh seed. At least that's what I guessed. And they're going to be much better than that, it looks like. So they were definitely a surprise. I think you got to go with the Nets and the Knicks just because of how disappointing they've been and how promising last season looked moving forward. I know maybe that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think that that's really the way you look at it, because you know, you can be surprised in a bad way, and they've surprised us in a really bad way because they've just been not good. Injuries, coaching decisions, whatever, J.R. Smith antics aside, they just haven't been good, and that's been a pretty big surprise. I don't think anybody saw that coming early on in the, you know, in preseason or even in early in the season. Wasn't really a thing you expected. At @Aras_Barum, I know you're not going to like a serious question, but is Adelman on the hot seat? Or just talk about Jean-Claude Van Damme's best split. Jean-Claude Van Damme's best split is definitely from Cyborg. He's pressed against the wall about, I don't know, 9-10 feet in the air. Guy looks up. He comes down on him with a knife, stabs him in the face. Easily the best split. The Time Cop one, where he's avoiding electrocution in his kitchen, that's also a very good one, but Cyborg definitely takes a cake. In terms of Adelman being on the hot seat, he's not on the hot seat. Fans overreact. Now, he's not... I wouldn't say like he's making great decisions, and I wouldn't say he has a great handle on the team right now, but it doesn't mean he's on the hot seat. He's definitely... If he's on the hot seat, then that's just Flip Saunders wanting to coach again, which I know he does want to, but I can't imagine that happening. At @HowNowBrownMao... asked, which NBA player has the best chance at stopping terrorists in Die Hard? I would guess Russell Westbrook. Super athletic, can get around, he's very quick, he's very strong, and he kind of has the mentality, like he would walk on glass with bare feet just to get to the free throw line or just to take a jumper, let alone like you give him a chance to take down some terrorists. I definitely think Westbrook is going to do whatever it takes. Kobe Bryant's also a great candidate. He's older, so maybe he's more in that live free or die hard John McClane mold as opposed to the die hard John McClane mold. I think you got to go with someone younger, so I would go with Westbrook. At KP for 3VT asks, what's your take on Joakim Noah's comments about real fans and tanking? There is legitimacy to what he's saying. Fans usually want to root for wins, and the idea of tanking puts a lot of people off. I think you should look at tanking in an intelligent way, of a realistic way of, this could be the best thing for our long-term goals. And your long-term goals should always be building a championship team. Whether that's realistic or not, that should be your goal. But the Bulls don't have that luxury anymore with Derrick Rose's injury. After trading Luol Deng, I think you can look at their situation and say, it would be really good if they got a top 7 pick in this draft. I mean, if you could add one of those, you know, those 7 seemingly can't miss prospects from this draft, then I mean, that's a very cheap, intelligent way of getting, you know, good labor at a discounted price for the next 4 years when Derrick Rose is going to need help and Joakim Noah is going to get help. So I understand his take on it. He shouldn't want to tank. He probably doesn't want fans to want to tank. He's too much of a competitor to not want to win games, and I get all that. But in terms of fans, I think it's realistic to look at your team and say, yeah, wins this season would be nice, but it doesn't do anything for us long-term. And long-term, we really need to, you know, get another piece to help out. And I don't think there's any problem with that. At Bim Trown asks, can you explain your position on Like Mike being a better film than Space Jam? Absolutely. It's not that Like Mike is good. It's not a good movie. Space Jam is just that bad. The script is horrible. Lil Bow Wow is a better actor than Michael Jordan, which isn't saying much, but he is. And I really think that the inclusion of... I mean, aside from... I mean, the part where the kid, like a 10-year-old, dunks from the free throw line is stupid. But kind of so is the premise of Space Jam. And as Ethan Sherwood Strauss has said on this podcast, there are some weird, like, slavery overtones with just the whole... Monster Mountain, whatever the mountain is, the Bad Mountain, Moron Mountain, that Michael Jordan would have to play tourists on in Space Jam if he loses the game. And there's like shackles, and it's just really, there's a lot of awkwardness to it. Whereas this is just Todd from Breaking Bad as a young guy being a bully and a jerk. And then you have Crispin Glover being a creepy guy. Eugene Levy being a sleazy businessman. That's just a lot more, it's just a lot easier to digest than what's going on in Space Jam. And one is a D minus and one is a D. So it's not like there is a huge disparity, but I'd rather watch Like Mike than Space Jam. At Crab Dribbles, who is an excellent follow on Twitter, does great stuff covering the D-League, asks, which playoff-bound team, in your opinion, is most likely to make a big trade before the deadline, and who will they move? I've been getting this a lot. I think the Houston Rockets are the most likely to make one. They have assets to move. They kind of need a third guy. You can say Chandler Parsons is a third guy, and he's excellent, but you could have Chandler Parsons and a third guy on that team. And I think that they still have, you know, they could move Terrence Jones if they wanted. They could move Monte Unis if they wanted. They could move, you know, Ashik or Jeremy Lin. Like, they have players to move. And I think that they, because of that, they've got a great chance at and maybe targeting a third guy if someone starts to falter a little bit. I don't know who that guy is. I don't know which stars were available. I mean, I know before the season there was a lot of talk of, oh, they should go after LaMarcus Aldridge. Well, that's not going to happen now. So in terms of figuring out who that third star might be, you know, that's tricky. But I think if anyone's going to make a big move, Houston has the assets and the flexibility to do it. At Hal Brown NBA asks, who is in the best position for the 8th seed in the West right now? Mavs, Grizz, Nuggets, or my Wolves? Also wants to know what my favorite book is. My favorite book is Drive by Larry Bird. It's an excellent autobiography. I've always been fascinated with him. He's one of my favorite players of all time, one of my favorite athletes. I love trash talkers. I love guys that were so good that they just decided to play around in meaningful games. The fact that Larry Bird shot left-handed for a couple of games just because he was bored is just unreal to me. And so that's my favorite. My favorite non-basketball book, I would say, I've actually been fascinated with, maybe this is just recency bias, but there's a book called The Skies Belong to Us, which is about hijacking planes in the 60s, 70s. This was like a real thing where planes were just being hijacked all the time because security was so lax and they were trying to get quick cash outs with ransoms and stuff. And it's just a fascinating read. It's really well written. The story they weave is true and it's incredibly well done. So that's probably, I don't know if it's my favorite book, but that's the one that popped in my head as the most recent. In terms of the team most likely to get the 8 seed right now, what's funny is the Wolves are ahead of all three of the teams you mentioned, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, and the Nuggets. The Wolves are ahead of them in Hollinger's rankings, which kind of predicts how the playoff seeding will happen. I wouldn't say they have the advantage. I think right now the Mavericks have the advantage, but they can't sustain a big injury. If they suffer an injury, I would have to go either the Wolves or the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies getting Marc Gasol back is obviously huge, and I think that, you know, they're kind of primed to go on a run here. At MeatCasm says, can you talk about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for like 30 seconds? Detroit's defense looks 625 times better when he's on the court. It does look better. I don't know if the numbers bear that out, but it definitely looks better with him out there. I think part of the reason is, one, he's athletic, two, he's very talented, and three, he tries. The only way he's going to get time over Rodney Stuckey right now is if he is, you know, busting his ass all the time on both ends of the floor. Because of Josh Smith, because of Brandon Jennings, it's not really feasible that he's going to get a ton of shots. Although, you know, they do seem to find him for some decent open looks here and there. But I think mostly he's got to make a mark on defense, and he's athletic enough, and he's good enough that he can, as he learns the game, he could become a pretty good defender. And that, you know, they already have a good defensive base. I think Brandon Jennings is a fine defender. I think he's really good at getting around screens on pick and rolls, which is kind of an underrated skill. Josh Smith is clearly a good defender. Andre Drummond protects the rim. You know, Greg Monroe rebounds. He's not really a defender, but he can help end possessions. So you put all those together, they could have a really decent defensive five with those five. But, you know, then you have to trust Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings on the other end of the floor, and that's not so hot. At Whammy Giveaway asks, do you think Griffin's improvement as a basketball player had anything to do with the unjust ejection on Christmas night versus the Warriors? He was 20.8 points per game before the ejection, 26.6 after. He's learning to play point forward. I don't think it has anything to do with the ejection. He was already a better player and much improved before that happened. I think it probably has everything to do with Chris Paul's injury and not being around. He has to do more because CP3's not there. So he's getting to be more of a high-usage player, being asked to be more of a playmaker, and that's why everything's gone up. You don't have Chris Paul to rely on and throughout the game to kind of take over stretches, so Blake Griffin's doing that because he's capable, because he's been capable of that for probably 2 years. He's just now really being given the chance. At Zoom on to Yamaha That was awkward to say. It says, best NBA celebration dance other than Big Balls, which is referring to Sam Cassell. By the way, Jameer Nelson getting fined for that, that's ridiculous. I know what the league's trying to do, but Zach Lowe had a great point on Twitter earlier. You can't make the fine for a celebration like that be more than, you know, multiple flopping violations if you're trying to eradicate flopping from the... And flopping is much worse for the league's image than somebody celebrating by putting their hands below, you know, their crotch around their knees and cupping. You know, like, it's just... I don't understand why we take away stuff like that. The throat slash, I get, but we can't say, oh, this guy's got stones, this guy's got onions, this guy's got, you know, brass ball. We can't say stuff like that if you're going to take away that celebration. You can't celebrate someone's intestinal fortitude to come through in the clutch and then say, oh, by the way, don't show us, you know, don't mimic that at all. Just go out there and be fine. I mean, if the opposing team's going to get offended by it, then come back and better his effort or stop him in the first place. But it's not bad for the league. It's not bad for their image. It's fun. It's something fans seem to like. As for my favorite NBA celebration dance, I'm just going to go with anytime Big Baby does something. He'll hit a big shot and then he just starts drooling. It's a Pavlovian kind of thing, kind of reaction where he hits a big shot, he starts screaming, spit is just flying everywhere. It's kind of intense, disgusting at the same time, and it's a lot. It's just one of my favorite things that pretty much any player does is the big shot drool reaction. At Foster DJ, friend of the program, Foster DJ, what's your favorite kind of cheese? Hashtag cheesecast, hashtag or cheesecake, hashtag endless possibilities with this question. I don't think putting cheesecake into the conversation is fair and or right, because that is an entirely different topic. I think if I had to pick a typical, easy-to-find cheese, I would go with brie. I love brie cheese. It's my favorite. My favorite in terms of like taste, but it's one, it's a little expensive, and two, it's kind of hard to find everywhere. It's like a Dolce de Bourgogne, I think that's what it's called, or Bourgeois. I can't remember exactly what it's called. I know what it looks like. It's a very soft cheese, very easy for spreading on crackers. That's my absolute favorite, but in terms of a much more common cheese, I definitely go with brie. At GSW Hoops asks, what are your thoughts on Mark Jackson this year? Rotations are questionable and offense has struggled for how much talent on Golden State. I'm fine. There's this idea that coaches need to have everything figured out on day one of a season. And that's just not realistic. There are plenty of moments throughout the season where, you know, there are ups and downs. Coaches have to adjust. Rotations may not be, you know, what the fans exactly want, but you have to figure out what guys can give you in certain situations, and I think that's kind of what he's done. I mean, he was given a bench that was gutted from last year. The best player off that bench is Harrison Barnes, but, you know, Draymond Green's kind of outplaying him, but he can't hit a shot. Maurice Spates may have been maybe the most consistent guy off the bench right now because Jermaine O'Neal's out. That's not good for anybody. He hasn't had a creator off the bench. So I think he's kind of playing around, seeing what he has for when the playoffs come, and maybe Jordan Crawford helps steady that enough to give them the score they need to where they can be more consistent. But I'm fine with what he's doing this year. He's experimenting. He's trying to pull stuff out of players that they need in the playoffs, like Harrison Barnes. And, you know, if these are the same rotations he goes with in the playoffs, then there's some question, but I don't know. I don't like this idea that coaches have to have everything figured out. That it isn't figuring stuff out in real time as you go along, because there are just so many ups and downs. Guys are feeling bad one day. You know, you have to adjust. Like, these are humans. This isn't a video game that you're setting a rotation. There are going to be ups and downs. I think that's fine. Jordan White wants to know, and that's at Jordan S. White. Who is your favorite coach to talk to? Which players do you think give the best hugs? Lastly, why am I the worst? Referring to himself, because on a recent podcast, Matt Moore and I definitely said that he was the worst. Jordan, you're the worst because of your Photoshops. And I know that is influenced by other people, maybe myself, definitely Andrew Lynch. Let's throw Noam Schiller in there and Bo Cherney. That's why you're the worst, is because your Photoshops are just terrifying. In terms of which players do I think give the best hugs? Definitely have to be Ricky Rubio. Not that I know, but that would just be my guess. Maybe Isaiah Thomas, too. Isaiah Thomas is one, a diminutive fellow. I don't know if you noticed that, but I just saw him last night and in person, and that is a small, small individual. And the small ones are always good huggers, I feel like. And who's my favorite coach to talk to? Has to be Popovich. I mean, he's the smartest coach in the league. I love just watching him. Even when he's popping people, when he's really discussing basketball, I love his approach to everything. I just think he's brilliant. I just think there's so much you can learn from the most basic comments that he gives. At I think it's funny one, why do hot dogs typically come in packs of 10 when hot dog buns typically come in packs of 8? This was covered in Father of the Bride, wasn't it? Doesn't he go on some rant in a grocery store where he's taking buns out of the package in order to make it even for the amount of hot dogs he's buying? And the store clerk has an issue with it, but he's trying to figure that out. I think it's just a marketing tool. I think it's just smart marketing. Why would you sell the exact same number? You're going to end up with a surplus, so you make people adjust and buy more. That's just, I feel like that's maybe not great business tactics, but it seems to be working because they've done it forever. At TMurph0789 asks, on a scale of 0 to OMG, LeBron is driving towards me, how nervous am I for the Niners game this weekend? I would say I'm at about a, oh my God, I'm standing between Boris Diaw and a buffet right now. I'm not completely scared, but it's enough of a terrifying thing where the weird thing is, I'm a Niners fan, but there's no real division rival. There's no real rival for the 49ers anymore. The division was never good in the 80s and 90s, never good enough to really present them with a consistent rival. They were just always better than everybody in the division, so you never got... I mean, I just never... It's smarmy, but it felt like the 49ers were above their division all the time, which they kind of were. I hated the Falcons in 1998, but that was really the only time. The Rams were just so good and so impressive that it was hard to really feel like they were a rival. They were just better. And since then, I mean, the Cowboys were rivals and the Packers were rivals for a while, but that's kind of died off a little bit. And now it's the Seahawks, and the Seahawks team I just love. Like, I hate Pete Carroll, but I love the Seahawks team. They talk a lot of trash. They're really physical. They're really good. They just, kick your ass up and down the field, and I love that. And I hate Pete Carroll, but I love the team, and I think that respect I have for them makes them even more terrifying. So, yeah, I'm scared. I'm not scared. Nervous. And I don't expect a win, but if they do manage to pull it off, I will be extremely happy and talking a lot of trash for no reason. At Chase Thomas SBN wants to know, why do we say heads up when we actually duck? I think we secretly want people to get hit. I think that's what it is. I think it's America's funniest home videos coming through. We all want to see the wiffle ball hit that guy in the nuts. Even though that doesn't really pertain to your question, we want to see someone get hit with a tetherball. How about that? At Lester Freeman wants to know, what's the least deadly weapon you'd need to kill Shaq in a cage match to the death? I think it's the Doku. I think that could make Shaq's head explode. At Bo Schwartz wants to know, will we see you on next year's list? He's referring to the Dis NBA done by Jacob Greenberg and Kevin Draper. Kevin Draper did a post on the top intellectuals for basketball discussion on the internet, and he wants to know if I'm going to be on the next year's list, or will it only be in case of injury to one of the others? I'm guessing there have to be a lot of injuries before I make that list. At KTV1999 wants to know, controversial topic in Memphis, where do you stand on fans booing their own players? Prince and Calathis both booed in Memphis this week. I guess I'm fine with it. I have a little bit of a problem with it because I think people boo for the wrong reasons. Tension is high in Minneapolis right now when it comes to the Timberwolves. And you can feel it throughout a game in the arena with each missed shot, even at the beginning of the games. There's just this audible groan of, why are you missing? Why aren't you better? Why, you know? And I think that kind of frustration should only be shown when there's a lack of effort. Just a guy playing poorly. If the effort's there, I think booing is a problem. I think it's kind of a Veruca Salt kind of reaction of, I want success and I want it now and I want the team that I cheer for to be the best, and you guys aren't the best, so I'm gonna pout. I don't like that. If a guy looks like he's not giving effort and is just like letting guys walk by, I mean, if you're rooting for James Harden to be a good defender, you just see him letting guys go by him left and right, I understand booing then. If there's a lack of production doesn't mean a lack of effort. So if there's a lack of effort, I'm for the booing. If there's a lack of production, I don't think that's feasible. I don't think that's reasonable at all. At Crab Dribbles has another one. Should the Blazers trade CJ McCollum? I don't see why. They've got a great bench so far, or at least a bench I think it can be set up for the playoffs. I think the long-term effect of keeping CJ McCollum around, especially when Mo Williams' contract is up, is much more valuable for this team long-term. And I just think he is a filthy player. He is really good. And I would keep him around, see what kind of chemistry he can create with the second unit, and maybe he works his way into the starting unit in a couple of years. Let's just say Luke, because this is a... I see what you're doing with your name, and I don't know that it's totally appropriate for me to read on the podcast. I'll just say at Luke says how much pizza or wants to know how much pizza can Hito eat? He can eat all of your pizza that Big Baby doesn't get to. At Chris K323, when are you going to get Ethan back on the EOB pod? I already said it a little bit earlier. Going to try to get him tomorrow. By the way, Ethan called me. I was going to be on Ethan's True Hoop live True Hoop TV thing yesterday, and then there was a mix-up, and Ethan called me at 2 in the morning. There was a mix-up. He said, you know, don't need you on the show, which was fine. I went about my day yesterday, and he called me. He felt bad. He left a voicemail. Called me at 2 a.m. Left a voicemail, you know, apologizing, which is very nice, but also very odd. Ethan, you got a little thirst there, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow. At turnaround underscore Jace asks, should the Nuggets tank or try to trade for talent? Also, pepper jack or goat cheese? Let's get to the important one first. I'm going to go pepper jack. I think it's more versatile. Goat cheese is good. I'm not against goat cheese. I think it's very good. It's very good on a lot of things. But I think pepper jack just has more flavor and can add more to, you know, a lot of dishes that goat cheese can't necessarily do. Goat cheese complements well, but it doesn't add much to it. In terms of the Nuggets, I think they're too good to tank. I don't know that tanking does anything for them right now. So if you're too good to tank, tanking kind of—I mean, you got to get really lucky in the lottery if you're already this good, and then you're trying to lose out. So I would say trade for talent. They have plenty of pieces to trade. A lot of versatility within the roster. They still need to shape it towards what Brian Shaw wants to run, whether you like that or not. He is the coach. They have a system. They have a vision, and you have to get the players to fit that vision if that's what you believe in. So I would say trade for talent. At Esir Pisir, E-C-I-R-P-C-I-R-E, let's hear your starting five of NBA players' siblings who didn't quite make it in the league. This is a tough one because, I mean, do you include Harvey Grant, brother of Horace Grant? Because Harvey had a decent career. I guess it would start with Wesley Person. I always thought Wesley Person was really good. He stuck around a little bit. He could shoot, but he could have been better. I think you have to throw Jaren Collins in there. And then I'm just going to assume Ricky Davis has three awesome brothers that should be in the league. At Con Byrne wants to know, will Rubio's shooting get better? Yes, it absolutely will get better. Will it become good enough? That's the question. That's a question I don't have an answer for, but it will definitely get better. He's not always going to be this bad. At J. Feldman 93 wants to know, where should Professor Miller get traded for comedy's sake? I want to see Andre Miller in New York because I want to see Raven Felton's reaction when Miller gets traded there. They could use some point guard depth. You know, Bano hasn't been that great. And Miller can play the two. I mean, Miller gives them a lot of options. You can go point guard lineup that worked with Jason Kidd last year. I want to see him in New York just because I want to see Raven Felton get the sads and pout through the media. At Andrew the Han wants to know, did you know the real world is still on, but this season they have to live with exes? What do you think that'd be like? I know for myself that would be awkward. I wouldn't want to do that. I don't like that. This is, not that there should be this higher ground of reality television, but that's not the real world. The real world isn't, oh, we got you in the house and now your exes are showing up. It's just seven people, seven strangers picked to live in a house. And we find out what happens when people stop being polite and they start being real. That's the real world. It's not seven strangers picked to live in a house. Oh, hey, their exes show up and now it's 14 strangers. I guess not 14 strangers, technically, because seven of them know the other seven. Whatever math that ends up being, I think that's a crap way to adjust the show. You think you can do that for the challenge? You can do that for other things, not the real world. The real world is a little bit sacred. I don't think Pedro is up in the sky looking down saying, yes, that's where the show should have gone. I don't think Puck would be happy with that. I don't think any other cast members that I can remember from the San Francisco edition would be happy with that. I don't think the Mujastar or Landon would be happy with that. I just think that I know CT wouldn't be happy with that. He didn't go to France to be with his ex. That's not okay. And so I don't know. I think it's really stupid. I think it's really a desperate plea to kind of maybe get ratings back up. I don't know what ratings are like for that show, but I'm not a fan of this twist, and I will not be watching for probably, I don't know, the 10th straight season, because at a certain point where you just stop, I guess. I don't know. I watch too much basketball to keep up with the real world, but I do like to check in on the challenge every once in a while. At Dr. Diplodocus, is Thibs playing Butler 60 minutes last night and his eventual need to sit out and rest Thibs tanking? Thibs tanking, I guess it would be. No, I think that's just Thibodeau saying, screw this, we're making a playoff push. I mean, they're the fifth or sixth seed right now in the East, which isn't much, but it's still something. They could conceivably, I mean, the system and the defense are good. If they're relatively healthy the rest of the way, they could get the third seed. I mean, that's kind of crazy that they would. He's not going to tank. They're going to have to pry Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, and Mike Dunleavy from Thibs' cold, dead hands. If they're going to try to get him to tank, you're going to have five DJ Augustines out there, and he'd still probably find a way to make them a decent defensive team. Another one from T-Murph 0789. Can we get a week of King James shooting 40-plus times for 1 week? Can you make this happen? I'll give LeBron a call after this podcast is posted. I'll say, look, you and I are good friends. We've been good friends for a long time. We go back longer than you and Maverick Carter have gone. Listen to me. You need to start shooting more. Just real quick, I'm kind of with everybody on this where, you know, LeBron says, oh, I'm jealous of how much KD gets to shoot sometimes. LeBron controls the offense of that team. And he knows that if he wants to take 30 shots in a game, he can take 30 shots in a game. It's just not the best basketball for them, even though he's that good. Their success is predicated on ball movement, passing, all that stuff. And he knows it. Everyone else knows it. And I think this is just him saying, oh, I can see maybe Durant's starting to get a little MVP buzz because he's, you know, having to carry a team without Westbrook, and he's shooting so much and scoring so much. I'm going to plant a little seed in the minds of the voters to remember I don't get to do that. He really could if he wanted to, but he doesn't really get to do that. So I think it was just a little strategy in the MVP voting as he tries to get, what would it be, his fifth, sixth award? Insane how good that guy is. And the last one, we'll have a little fun with this last one. At Eric_Black says, power ranking, E.T., Raiders of the Lost Ark, Rambo, Risky Business, Ferris Bueller. We'll go in reverse order. Number 5 is E.T. It doesn't hold up all that much. It's still a good movie. It's not bad by any means. But if E.T.'s on, and are you really stopping on that channel to check out the last hour and a half of E.T. or the last 45 minutes? It's really not. It's not like it's the Goonies out there. You're not just going to stop at any time. You kind of have to be in the mood for E.T., and that's what really hurts it. So E.T. is 5. I'll say Risky Business is 4. Solid movie. There's the famous, you know, sliding through scene with Take Your Old Records Off the Shelf or whatever the hell that song is. It's good. It's something you can definitely watch it at any time. But it's not going to be... That's also not going to be something you're really seeking out on TV. 3 is going to be Raiders of the Lost Ark. Fantastic action movie, but it's not quite Rambo. I'm assuming we mean First Blood on this. I'm not to be a well-actually Twitter participant, but I'm guessing you mean First Blood. First Blood is just a better overall action movie. It's easier to make fun of, which has a lot of rewatchability because of that. So I'm going to go Raiders of the Lost Ark 3, First Blood is 2, and then Ferris Bueller is 1. Ferris Bueller, you can come in at any time in that movie, no matter what, and completely get wrapped up. There's so many memorable scenes. It is the best movie of those 5. That's what we're going to end it on, is that little 80s power ranking there. Really appreciate the support. Again, you can email zach.harper@cbsinteractive.com. If you have podcast questions, you can always tag it. Hashtag EOBpod. We're happy to answer them on the show. We're happy to answer them in these solo efforts. If you haven't, please subscribe. Please leave a 4 or 5 star review. Really helps us in the rankings. Our bosses like that kind of feedback. And let us know. And if you do have criticisms outside of the audio quality, which, you know, we're limited in what we can do, let us know. Let us know what you want to talk about, what you want us to talk about. Send in questions that helps us figure out what people want to listen to, which does actually matter to us. And we're just happy to help you kill some time during the day. Thanks, everybody.